What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews. And this one's going to be a little bit different today. I was actually interviewed on Mr. Dan Pascone's podcast. It's called Making Sense of Your Money. And I wanted to let you listen in on that conversation. And I think it would be a good one for you to kind of get a high-level view of my opinion, because I was getting interviewed about the short-term rental markets, about, you know, navigating these shifting markets and what we're looking at in the short-term rental game. And so we wanted to let you listen in on that conversation. And so that's what you're going to actually be listening to on this one, as I was getting interviewed on Making Sense of Your Money podcast. So we'll go ahead and jump into that right now. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to our dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast.
Welcome to episode 18 of the Making Sense of Your Money podcast. I'm your host, Dan Pascone. I am the founder and CEO of Tailored Wealth. And as you know, each of our episodes on the Making Sense of Your Money podcast features a trusted voice in the financial world, someone who works directly with high-level professionals to simplify the complex and turn strategy into action. And I'm pretty pumped about this one today. We've got with us a special guest, Sean Moore. And Sean's got a lot of experience. He's on a lot of different platforms, and he is the founder of Vodacy. And Sean, for his entire career, has been a really successful real estate investor. So I'm interested to hear a little bit more about his thoughts on that asset class. So Sean, thanks for joining the Making Sense of Your Money podcast. Pumped to have you today, brother.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. I really appreciate it. I love having these types of conversations. So I appreciate you having me.
Likewise. I know I have a lot that I want to hear and learn from you. I know our viewers and audience will as well. If you don't mind, let's jump right in and give us just like a quick 90-second overview of what you do, how you got into that space, and then ultimately what you're helping your clients to achieve.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate it. And yeah, so I've been full-time real estate investor for 25 years now. So right out of college, I had a job for about 6 months and wholesaled a house and made 2/3 of my annual income, and thought, hey man, this salary job deal is not for me. So
yeah,
we jumped into real estate right away. Bounced around a lot of different asset classes, actually. I spent a lot of my early years in real estate investing in fix and flip stuff, did a lot of fix and flip, did development deals, build jobs. And ultimately, fast forward, started getting involved in second homes and resort style developments, and started to kind of get introduced to the vacation home side of investing back in like 2006, and bought my first vacation rental back then, and saw how it performed during the slide of, and realized, holy crap, this, even though this property is losing value, I'm actually making quite a bit of money on it. And this was before Airbnb and Vrbo and everything became really popular. It was just local classifieds, Craigslist, renting it on the weekends, and realizing that, man, there might be something to this after a few years of doing it. And back in 2012, 13-ish, we started getting really serious about this asset class, and have been fortunate to watch it grow up and starting to become mainstream. COVID hits, it becomes really mainstream, and everybody looks like a genius in the short-term rental world for about a two-year period. It was like I always tell people having a short-term rental was like having toilet paper during COVID during that time. And it was, while it was a fun ride, it also was never going to last either. And I mean, this is an actual, there are nuances to it. There's pros and cons to short-term rentals. And back in 2017, before COVID, I actually wrote a book that was kind of teaching people our process with it. And because of that, that book kind of took off when short-term rentals came very, very popular after 2020, and Vodacy was formed, and we started teaching people. And I thought I was going to teach about 100 people how to build a portfolio. And we've got about 3,000 active investors across the country and have a lot of fun with it.
Very, very cool. Yeah, that's certainly an interesting ride. So, I think most of our viewers and listeners will understand what a short-term rental is. But like, give us like a little bit of a look under the hood as to like, what does it take to be successful in that space? I've got a ton of friends, certainly a ton of clients that have said, I want to get into this, or maybe have gotten into this, but what does it take to really make this a career and build a true business out?
Yeah, what it is, I always tell people, at least our view of short-term rentals, these aren't side hustles. They're not second jobs. These are assets that we invest in. And like any other asset that we're going to invest in, but what we do is try to help people take their active income, putting it into certain asset classes. Ours particular is short-term rentals, the only one that we know very well. I know that like you guys help people analyze and look at and maybe diversify that portfolio. For us, we're saying, let's take some of that active income, put it into something passive, and understand what it takes to succeed. The big misconception with short-term rentals is that, well, if you rent it short-term, you're going to make more than putting it on as a long-term rental. I've been in real estate for a long time, and there's usually a highest and best use for a property, and there's not a lot of, you know, not a lot of plan Bs and Cs when it comes to property usage and investing. Like, people will always say, well, if it doesn't work out as this, you can do this. That's not really the case most of the time. There's usually a highest and best use of that, and that there's no different with short-term rentals. Not every market works well for short-term rentals. Not every property works well. Some markets are very regulated. Other markets, there's not a lot of demand. And so what you have to realize is we're not in the property business. The property is part of what we do, is what we're delivering, but we're in the experience business. We're in the hospitality business now. And a lot of people that don't understand that think that I can just go buy a really pretty property, furnish it like a model home, throw it on Airbnb, and I'm going to make money. That game has changed. It's not that anymore. You very much have to dial in the hospitality side of it. And it can be a lot more moving parts in the beginning. And when we're saying, okay, I'm working with high income earners, busy professionals, trying to take that active income, put it into something passively on a 5 to 10 year time horizon, well, that's a hard sell sometimes, right? And it's like, you know, I know you guys, I'm sure, have tons of conversations with those people, like saying, hey, listen, we need to look 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line. And when everybody wants this like instant gratification, right? And short-term rentals became this shining star of the real estate world for a little while. And it was instant gratification for a couple of years for a lot of people. And it really introduced a lot of people to the wrong way to play this game. And so right now you hear those stories of the Airbnb bust and the short-term rental game is over. And it's actually nothing is further from the truth. It's that there's a lot of people playing a game that they don't understand the rules of, and they're getting crushed, but the consumer is spending more money than they've ever spent. And so I still believe, you know, we're super excited about it as an asset class, but it always has pros and cons, just like everything else.
Very cool. Very cool. Great explanation there. So I want to dig into that like hospitality component for a second, Sean. So like, I want to see it through the lens of like a typical client of ours that's got a high demand job, whether they be an executive or they own their own business, and they've got capital that they want to put to work, right? And so they see an asset class like short-term rentals and the potential upside and the passive income that comes with it. But help educate us on what you do and maybe what they would need to understand to really master that like hospitality piece where they may not have really any expertise.
Yeah. And it's why we have a business, is to try to help people navigate those waters that can be a little bit muddy at times, because without understanding, first of all, the game you're going to play, like our goal is always to help people walk into this game with their eyes wide open. And that sometimes means it's not the game they should play. And how much time is it going to take for somebody that is busy and feels like that there's not an extra hour in any day, let alone, you know, multiple days, right? What we try to do is put together a blueprint for them to say, hey, listen, we're going to dedicate 3 to 5 hours a week for the next year or so. And that's a commitment. That's all. I mean, when you really are saying, I'm going to dedicate an extra hour a day, every single day, you know, we're having to cut something out. And so if somebody's doesn't have the time to do that, it's going to be a difficult game to play, even as we try to compress all the effort that they have to do. I don't manage any of my own properties. We teach them how to get the teams in place. At this stage, we've got, you know, we've got a really extensive Rolodex, I will say, of the CPAs, the management partners, the finance partners, the designers, everything else. So they're just plugging into a system. But at the end of the day, they still have to kind of understand the system. And that's where that 3 to 5 hours a week is going to come into. And what I also, and I'm sure that you guys have these conversations all the time, when somebody is analyzing an investment or, you know, what their ultimate financial goals are, because so many of, like myself included, especially in my younger years, I was very financially illiterate. And you just don't learn that stuff in school. I came from a family that my parents, well, they worked their 40 hours a week and they contributed their 401ks and they did what they were supposed to do. And at the end of the day, they're not, you know, they're looking at it saying, holy crap, you know, my mom's and dad are on payroll now, right? And they're retired, but they can't live on retirement. And so they're on my payroll, and which I love. I love that we can do that. But the old school way of doing things doesn't work. And we have to look at different alternatives. This is one alternative. But with real estate, there's really four ways that you get a return on that asset class. And a lot of people always focus on the one that is the least of your returns in a 5 to 10 year time horizon, which is cash flow. Everybody's like, I'm chasing the cash flow. I want X amount of cash flow. And I'll give you a quick example of that, Dan, is I always say, hey, listen, if I'm going to go buy a $500,000 property, and this is, you know, and I have to put 20% down, I'm going to put $100,000 into that. So I've got $100,000. I'm a busy professional trying to decide what to do with this money. Where should I put it? How am I calculating my returns? Well, in real estate, you're going to put that $100,000 down on a $500,000 asset, which is great because we've got leverage, right? We're not over leveraging. I'm not a huge fan of 100%, 5%, you know, some of those big high leverage properties, but 20% is a good position to be in or more. And then let's say that's giving me a 5% cash on cash return. Nothing to write home about. I'm not going to retire on that. I'm getting $5,000 a year. At really most, I'm trying to do, Dan, is if I have a big capital expense, like an air conditioner or something goes out, I've got the capital to pay for it. I don't like negative cash flow, but I don't chase really high cash flow. So I get 5% there. The next thing I get is note pay down. Somebody else is paying for this property for me over time, right? So first couple of years is going to be really modest. Maybe it's another $5,000 a year on that $500,000 asset that my note gets paid down because somebody else is paying that mortgage for me. So there's another 5%, right? That's compounded that year. Then the other two are huge for real estate investors. The third one is appreciation. And this is where I really like short-term rentals because short-term rentals allow us to buy quality assets in quality areas because they're vacation areas. They're areas people want to be. They're not places that you're going to go find a bunch of long-term rentals. And so we're buying higher quality assets in higher quality areas that appreciate at better than average clips. But the average clip in America over a 40-year run is 5%. And you have to look back. I always look back at least 20 years because you need to have an upside and a downside in there to average it out, right? You can't look back at real estate the last 5 or 10 years and say, well, it's averaging 15% or 12%. That's not realistic, right? I need to look back a long time horizon. But let's say I'm still right at that 5%. Well, this is where the big power of leverage comes in, is that asset went up 5%, not my $100,000. And so the asset, that $500,000 asset is now worth $525,000. So now I've got a 25% return on my $100,000 that year because I got, now I'm up to 35% return. I got a 25% on appreciation, 5% on note pay down, 5% on cash flow. And then the third one with taxes and depreciation and with short-term rentals, active income earners don't have to qualify as a real estate professional to take bonus depreciation. They can qualify with a short-term rental loophole called material participation, right? And it's different. And it allows us to do that. And now all of a sudden, I'm able to write off usually somewhere around 25% of the purchase price of my property, depending on the area after I cost seg it out. Well, if I'm paying 35% taxes and I get 25% write off of my 500, it's $125,000 write off. I reduce my taxes by another 35, 40 grand. And so all of a sudden, I've got a, you know, 40,000, 25,000, five. All of a sudden, before I know it, I've got a 75% return on my 100,000 when so many new investors will say, I'm only getting 5% on the front end. I'm going to put it somewhere else. And so that's why I love real estate. It's not necessarily right out of the gates for the cash flow. And that's why I love working with high income earners that are saying, hey, listen, I need to put it into quality assets that over a certain time horizon, I'm going to get this nice return on. And then there's the fifth aspect for short-term rentals that's not available for other real estate is the personal use. It's a lifestyle upgrade.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's pretty fun to have vacation homes all across the world that we can use and somebody else is paying for. It's not necessarily returning me any money from that. In fact, it costs me when I use my properties typically. But it's a huge lifestyle upgrade.
I'll add another one on for you. You probably have heard of the Augusta rule. So if you've got a business owner that can go use it for business purposes, you get the additional tax break there. We'll get into that another time. All right. So that's really good. I love the understanding of the complete picture and not just sort of just chasing that cash flow because there's a lot more to it than that. So let me ask you this, Sean. You said you've got 3,000 investors, which congratulations on that. Tell us a little bit about what is your ideal investor look like? How do you find them? And what's a good candidate for someone that's going to come and work with you and your team?
Yeah, usually, we're looking for higher income earners. They've got disposable income. They've got extra cash. They're saying, hey, listen, they're buying into the fact. Most of my ideal clients, Dan, honestly, come to me and the first conversation we have is they're in, late 40s, early 50s, and they're looking at their 401k and they're calculating it out and saying, man, I'm going to retire and take a huge step backwards. And they're saying, I need to do something else. I need to take control. I'm interested in real estate. We always are looking for somebody that's making at least $250 a year, not because they need to be accredited, just because the fact of the matter is I teach the ownership model. I teach people how to go buy properties. I don't teach a no money down, all that kind of stuff. We buy properties all the time on seller financing and everything else. But at the end of the day, our ideal client is somebody that is saying, hey, listen, I'm working my butt off. I want to enjoy life today. I don't want to wait forever, which is why we like people are attracted to those lifestyle assets, because it's, I always say to somebody, you know, it's like going and buying that, you know, fancy $300,000 wakeboard boat. We do it to create the memories and spend the time with our families and everything else. What about instead of buying that boat, you go buy your cabin or the beach home or whatever else, and you can still kind of, you know, satisfy that need of wanting to create those memories, but you're buying quality assets. But it's really just somebody that is saying, hey, listen, I'm working too hard for this and I want to put it somewhere responsibly. It's the same people you guys probably talk to, Dan, and they want to know what their options are. And we're one of many options, right? It's not like I always say, I don't, it's where all my money's at. It doesn't mean it's where everybody else's money should all be at.
Yeah, you hit on a concept that I talk about all the time, and I hear from our clients and prospective clients almost daily, probably daily at this point in time. And it's a concept that I've coined hybrid retirement, which is I'm in an intense job, I'm earning well, but like, you know, I'm trading my time for money, yes, right? And in the future, I'd like to get to a place where I'm not necessarily looking to go hang it up and go sit on the beach somewhere and never, yes, do anything again. I want to get to a place where I can get rid of the 9-to-5, or in many cases, it's a lot more than 9-to-5, right? But I can get rid of the intense job, but still do something that's meaningful, that's purposeful, and where I have a lot more flexibility and control of my time. So we talk to them a lot of times, and this is why I really enjoy this conversation, about how do we supplement the income in some form of way. And for some people, it's consulting. For some people, it's fractional work. But this can be a really nice complement to that for the right people, to your point, to be able to build that up. So let's kind of take down the journey of like the first time short-term rental investor. I go and I buy the beach house, or I go and I buy the cabin, and I'm getting the experience that you just laid out and that nice sort of compounding return with the four different categories. Where do you go from there? Is it just a matter of just kind of doing the system over and over again? How do you make this, instead of just like a one-time experience, something that's more scalable?
Yeah, I love the question, because you know, one of the things that people are always surprised about is how highly producing a small portfolio can be. Like, I've never had more than 8 homes. I usually have somewhere between 6 and 8 homes as long as we've been doing this. But we continually trade up based on a return on our equity after usually about 5 years into a home. But what you're really doing, you really are rinsing and repeating, and you're using that disciplined, you know, that you have to be fairly self-reliant. You have to look in the mirror and say, hey, listen, I'm going to have this disciplined approach, because the first few years, you're just, if you, you know, those first 2 or 3 properties, you're not quitting on them anyways. You're not typically replacing your income. But if you're disciplined enough to take the earnings from those, the savings from those, and parlay them into multiple other properties, usually for most people, it's somewhere around that property 4 or 5 that they have the option to quit, right? They have, and that's what we want. We want options. We don't want to have our back against the wall and say, hey, listen, I have to keep working and doing this. There's a lot of our clients who love what they do. They're making good money. It's also nice to have the options that if you do get tired or you do not want to do it, that you don't have to, but it doesn't happen overnight. This type of a portfolio, it's like spinning a flywheel. It's going to take some time to get it moving, right? And you're going to put some effort in the beginning. Once that sucker's spinning, it's pretty hard to stop it. And what's really fun about it is I always tell people, you know, especially high income earners, you're going to, and likely with the new tax law that's going to probably pass, you know, closely to when this thing airs, bonus depreciation is going to come back, and it's supposed to be permanent is what they're proposing. And that's a big, big deal, because on that example I gave you, that's an extra $40,000 now that you're putting back into the investment kitty. Just pretend you paid it to the IRS. Just pay it to yourself and put it in your investment account. And then you take that $40,000. Now I don't have to save up $100,000. Just that one savings. I don't have to save up another $100,000 to go for my next property. I just need to save up $60,000. And then I do that again. And then I have 2 of those properties doing that. And I do it again. And before you know, you're hit. And the reason it's 4 to 5 properties for most people, because most of us buy within our earning potential, right? If I'm making $1 million a year, I'm not usually buying $300,000 properties. I'm buying bigger properties that are going to produce more. If I'm making $200,000 a year, I might be buying $300,000 to $500,000 properties. It's going to be, but those properties are going to do a good job of replacing that $200,000 income. Somebody that's making $1 million a year, you're probably going to buy $2 or $3 million properties. It's going to be able to produce enough to replace your income. And so the game is saying, am I willing to buy into the fact that after I do this for 3 to 5 years, that's when the real payoff is. And I always ask my clients to say, hey, listen, be disciplined enough not to live off, not to use this money. Just put it right back into the investment kitty so that you can get to that point where it starts to really produce.
Help our audience. That's great stuff. Help our audience understand. You did a great job of laying out sort of like the financial components here. Help our audience understand. You mentioned the time component. What's the work that's involved? Like, what do they need to be prepared to dedicate to really make the system that you have, sounds like, really perfected work? What do they need to be willing to give from their own energy, their own time, et cetera?
Yeah. One, I think the hardest thing is mentally being able to follow a recipe. And okay. So I always tell people, do a lot of due diligence on the front end. You know, if you're going to hire me or anybody else, like, look at our recipe, look at the blueprint, look at the things that we've done, look at the properties we own, look at the people we've helped. It's one thing if I know how to do it, but if I don't know how to teach anybody to do it, that's another thing too. Like, you need to be able to look and say, okay, is this the blueprint? Because I'll tell you what's really hard right now, Dan, and because you don't need to go put in the work to understand or learn this stuff. That's been done for you, right? There's so many people that can just pass the baton, myself included, that say, hey, listen, here's the road we ran down. I'm going to pass you the baton so you don't have to run down what I've already run down. You can run further and faster and farther. And so it's not work trying to figure anything out. It's the hard part is the discipline to buy into a recipe, do a ton of due diligence on the front end so that you feel confident. This is the right blueprint recipe I'm going to follow, because there's so much noise out there. You know, you're going to hear me say one thing, somebody else say another thing, and they both might work, but they don't work together. Does that make sense? Like, there are a lot of paths you can run down, but the people I think that struggle the most are the people that try to run down so many paths at once. And it's like, hey, listen, there's a lot of things that work. And I think that the hardest thing right now in the age that we live in is you have a lot of options and there is no shortage of advice. And the due diligence on the front end is what's important, because there's a lot of advice that's just AI generated. I mean, I can't tell you, yesterday I found a competitor of ours that's literally using my property, one of the I own, on their app ads with my exact scripting, and they've never done this before, and they're just trying to get into the game, but they're using all of our stuff. That happens all the time. It's no, sure. So, but once you peel back a few layers of the onion on the due diligence, you can find that out really quickly. But hire the people, don't figure it out on your own. There's no reason, right? For anything, you need time, money, knowledge, right? You know what capital you have when you're investing.
Yep.
The time is going to be 3 to 5 hours a week with our blueprint. Somebody else's might be different, because a lot of people teach you to manage your own homes. That's going to be another probably 15 hours a week if you're going to manage your own homes. I don't do that, but it costs me. I pay for that, right? I pay a management company.
You pay for the time. For sure.
And yeah. And then the knowledge. It's like, okay, how do I bridge the knowledge gap? It's finding the right people to help you with that. But then once you say that is the right person or organization or whatever it is, this is the right blueprint, stay on it. Because I see too many people that run down one road. Then they think, oh, I'm going to, it's a little harder than I thought. I'm going to run down this road. It's a little harder than I thought. I'm going to jump over here and try this one. And they're never any further ahead when they should have just stayed on the same road.
I love it. Really, really good stuff, Sean. All right. We're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to get to know you a little bit better now. We heard all about the business and that concept. So we're going to head into what we call the lightning round. I never prep anybody. Just like to get really authentic answers here. And the only thing we ask is first thing that comes to your mind. Could be a one-word answer. It could be a drawn-out thought, whatever works best for you. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Coffee or tea? If you had to eat one meal every day for the rest of your life, what is it?
Steak and potatoes.
He didn't hesitate there, ladies and gentlemen. What I want. He did not hesitate there. That was good. All right. What's one tool, could be hardware or software, other than your computer or your phone? So one piece of technology that you can't live without.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Can be something I have on my farm.
Sure.
I've got automatic door openers for my stalls, for my cows and my chickens, so I don't have to wake up and go
all
up
right.
there.
Every night. By the way, that's technology at its finest right there, brother.
I use that every day. If I had to do that, you know, those come in real handy a lot of times for me.
I love it. Do you have a favorite quote or phrase about money or success?
Probably my one of my favorites is the advice of be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. and really paying attention to not really following the masses. That's old Mr. Warren Buffett.
Love it. Yep. The Oracle himself.
Yes.
You have a favorite book on business or success?
Winning by Tim Grover.
Yep. Okay. Good one. Know that one well. You have a personal hack you can share with the audience?
Oh, mine is routine. I guess it's just a daily routine, morning routine, daily routine. I'm a very routine person. That has allowed me to accomplish a lot more than being kind of at everybody's beck and call. And so I would say, and I don't think you follow my routine or Dan's routine or anybody else's, right? I think everybody can develop their own routine. But for me, that has been a huge hack.
Love it. Love it. What's one bucket list item that you've already accomplished?
The trip that I take with my friends every single year, we go to Alaska, a disconnect. We decided we were going to do this. This is maybe my 20th year in a row. So we decided we were going to do this a long time ago. We haven't missed a year. And I love the outdoors, love Alaska. And we've continued that tradition on. And I think that's a pretty, pretty amazing thing for us.
Very cool. Very cool. How many folks on that trip?
10 of us.
Very cool. Good for you. Yeah. What is one milestone, whether it be personal or professional, that you're currently working towards?
Yeah, we're trying to, my milestone that we really want to hit is we want Vodacy to be a $30 million a year company. And so for us, we've hit about 18 million. And so we're trying to hit that 30 million mark. And this has been one of those big milestones that we think is real possible.
Good for you, man. That's awesome. And last one, what's one piece of advice you would give to your younger self?
Don't be afraid to just take a chance. You're going to suck at whatever you try first, the first time. And don't worry about who's looking, who's doing anything. Be proud of that person that says, I'm glad I did instead of I wish I had.
Absolutely, man. The power of being in the arena, and we all suck at some point in time. That is for sure.
If we sat here and we could have a whole podcast on the things that didn't work, right? Versus the 100%. Things that did.
But it's the lessons learned that, I mean, absolutely. I've seen that myself in life. It's the lessons learned that really drive you to where you want to get to. Awesome stuff, Sean. I've really enjoyed this. And then lastly, if our listeners want to connect with you, collaborate with you, potentially work with you, which after everything you've told me, I don't know about the listeners, but I'm going to be a client of Sean. So tell us where they can reach you.
Yeah, you can check out Vodacy.com. It's VODYSSEY.com. And we have all kinds of resources there. We've got lots of case studies, lots of success stories. I've got my book on there. You've got free trainings on there, lots of resources. And then if it comes to the point where you want to chat, there's a way to get a hold of us and jump on my calendar.
Awesome, man. Well, that's really, really cool. So we'll put that in the show notes as well. Vodacy.com. Sean, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights today. Really, really enjoyed this. That's it for the episode. As always, keep your strategy sharp, your goals clear, and your money working as hard as you do. Cheers, everybody.